No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008 or Skype us at BBS Radio 1. We have no guests today because it's a holiday, and I didn't want to make anybody else work on a holiday. I don't mind making Kathleen work on a holiday because she owes me so much, because I am her only real friend in the world, and I've done wonderful, wonderful things for her over the years. So let me start by wishing all our Christian friends out there a happy Easter, and also all our Jewish friends a happy Passover, which started last Monday. Before we go any further, let me introduce my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, who is joining us from Arizona. Hi, Kathleen. As always, thanks for helping getting the conversation started. Was the Easter Bunny good to you? I heard he was afraid to come to Arizona because all you people are packing. Is that true?
I know. It's kind of like shoot first and then ask questions later. So if I would worry too if I was the Easter Bunny. I would not want to be, because we just shoot. Shoot, just, you know, you shouldn't be on our property to begin with.
Exactly.
That's the way it always goes, you know?
So I
everything is good. You know, it's kind of like it's Easter and
yeah.
Can't believe it's Easter already. April the 20th. April the 20th. A lot of things are happening on this day.
And today starts the second year of our show.
That's right. This is the second, the beginning. I thought it was last week.
Well, last week was the 1 year anniversary. And so today's the first show of the second year.
Ah, okay. So this is really interesting that we're still doing it after all this time. But, you know, I must say that I've met people. I met a young woman in her 30s whose husband is a lawyer. They're from Boston, living in Kansas. And, you know, I was talking to her, and she's involved. Her husband wants to run. I mean, it was kind of interesting. It kind of gave me a new hope in that, you know, there are people who are going to get involved and become involved in what they need to, whether it's local or their school board or their city council. I mean, it was nice. So I'm feeling very hopeful. Usually I don't feel so hopeful. I feel like, you know, people are too lazy to really care. But this young girl, she was expecting her child. And we were talking about everything from being a young girl in today's society to the way it used to be, and technology to, I don't know. It was just kind of nice to talk to someone. Maybe we just thought alike. I don't know. But she was one of those people that I think, that kind of couple that you hope really, really make it, because they'll make a difference.
Well, you know, I've had that experience too, and a few years ago I had an experience where I met a woman. As you know, I trained Native Americans that wanted to run for public office, and I felt the same way about her. She was a doctor. I'm sorry, her husband was a doctor, both Native Americans. Her husband was a doctor, and she was running for her first political office, which was school board. And I think she won her school board race. But, you know, they had just gotten married and wanted to have kids, and they really cared about education and issues that affected their particular tribe on the reservation and Native Americans in general. And, you know, she was bright and articulate and energetic. And you just say, yay, mm-hmm. you know, the future looks bright as long as people like this get involved. And I also just last week paid for two people to go to a management course that I'm on the board of directors of a thing called the Leadership Development Council here in Washington. It's a nonprofit group that actually tries to encourage young people and give them the tools they need to start a political career. So I paid for two young people to take that course. One's a young mother who's chairman of the Ward 8 Democrats, and the other one's an activist with veterans. He's an Afghani. You know, he was in Afghanistan and Iraq, and now he's back in Washington, and he's a veterans advocate. So that's great. You know, I hope that they continue on and get elected to something.
Exactly, because as we know, and I think maybe soldiers can even see it more than regular citizens, is how people you elect, even if you don't vote, you're electing somebody. You know, as I always like amazed people, say, well, you know, I didn't vote. Like, right. I wasn't part of the problem. Well, by not voting, you are part of the problem because you've given your vote away to somebody else, right. even though you didn't mean to. So I think soldiers understand the impact that elected officials have on everybody's lives and foreign policy. And, you know, and if they just study military history, I'm sure they realize you have to be involved. You just, there's no other way around it. You know, we can't just sit back and let somebody else do it, because that never works.
That's right. And you have to vote because, you know, for not only for all the reasons, you know, and for what you just said, but I'll tell you, I was at a mayoral forum. You know, we just had a new person win the Democratic primary, and I was at a forum with like five or six candidates, and one of the better candidates was up there, and the person that was in charge of the asking the questions asked this person why he hadn't voted in the last five elections. And everybody in the room gasped when Mark Plotkin, who's a local journalist, said, if you want to be elected, why haven't you voted in the last five elections? And this guy said, because I didn't see anybody that I was interested in voting for. And people even gasped more when he said that.
Oh my gosh.
He would have been better off saying it was a mistake, because you know, people, you need to go out there because of exactly what you said. If you don't cast your vote, not making a decision is making a decision.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And so people just got to understand that. And I think we should start. I wonder how many people agree with this. I think all elections should be on one day, November the 4th of every year, whether it's for your school board or for your city council, county supervisor, president of the United States, and that you have to go vote. You have to physically go and vote. And it's just one day, and your employers give you – let's make it a national holiday. We make holidays for all other kinds of things. We should have a holiday to vote, and that's when it's done, and everybody has to get off their butt and go and vote. And if they don't vote after five times, if you don't vote, then, you know, I don't know, maybe you should think about whether or not you should be a citizen of the United States. I know that's a radical thought, but hey, you know.
Well, you know, I know that there are different laws in different countries. In Australia, they pay you to vote. They don't pay you very much.
They pay you to vote in Australia, but they still pay you.
Yes, wow. They pay you. I don't know how much they pay you. I can't remember. It's not a lot of money. But they give you something for your time and effort. They pay you to vote, to come out and vote. And they have a very high voter participation. Here we are in Washington, D.C., the nation's capital. And, I mean, there are a lot of reasons that we have low voter turnout. But we didn't have one out of three people that was registered to vote. Vote in this primary. Only a third of registered voters, and that's registered voters. There are more people that are eligible to vote than are registered to vote, but only a third of them showed up. And that's just, it's just terrible. A third of the people in the district, a third of the people just made a decision on who the new mayor is going to be, because that person that wins the Democratic primary almost always wins. Right. In fact, in the history of District Columbia, no one who's ever won the Democratic primary for mayor has ever lost. So it's a pretty safe bet that that person will get elected.
And in a sense, don't you think that's a corrupt system in itself, that it is so, you know, if you vote, the primary decides who actually wins the election?
Well, I think it's because people don't understand the process and they don't get involved. For example, there are a lot of people that register in the District of Columbia to be independent. And I think that's just a crazy thing to do if you live in a jurisdiction where you have a preferential primary, because it takes you out of the primary process. And you really don't get to pick the key. You just get to vote in the general election. I mean, it doesn't matter. If you say to yourself, well, I don't like either the Democrat or the Republican Party, and you live in a preferential state, well, just register for one party, and then you get in the primary, you can vote. You know, you can either vote to support a candidate or vote against the candidate. At least you have a voice. So okay. I think that's one problem, that people don't understand the process. And another is they don't understand the connection, how important it is. I know you tell this story over and over again, but it's so true. And it's certainly my experience from my immigrant parents. But you talk about the fact that your ex-husband came from a country where they didn't have the right to vote, and that it was such a precious right to them when they came to the United States. My immigrant Italian grandmother was the same way. She voted in every election, right. You know, every election, because she felt that it was an obligation as much as a right.
Exactly. Exactly. That's so true. So,
well, go ahead.
I kind of was just thinking about what you said about my ex-father-in-law, you know, and I mean, I think the other thing that he always said that was amazing to me was he said he could never understand how we would just give up, you know, the power when a party lost, like when the Republicans lost, right. And it changed the Democrats. He couldn't believe it. He said, well, why are they're just handing over power. And that's what I would say to people who are so sure that if you do a national registry that the government is going to find you and knock the doors down. Maybe when it comes to a point in our history where either a Democratic or Republican president does not give up power and decides to hold the reins, then maybe that's the day that the government will come in and knock your door for your guns. But I think we're a very, very long way from having that happen.
Right. So. I don't think Americans would stand for that because of our tradition. But you're right. I mean, I don't think it matters if they had an election in Russia today, whether Boris Yeltsin – I'm not Boris Yeltsin. Oh, I'm so crazy. But Putin, Vladimir, you know, it's just how old I am. Vladimir Putin, I don't think it matters who wins. He would still be in charge. Mm-hmm. He would, you know, he would void the election if he didn't win. So you're right. It's we have an amazing system, and people should participate in it.
Exactly.
And now that we're on the subject, let me just say, since one of the purposes of this show is to talk about our situation here in Washington, that Congress was on vacation this week. This is probably why you haven't seen any crazy laws come out of Washington over the last week. But Congress was in recess, so there are no new co-sponsors for the statehood bill. However, we have gotten 5 new senators in the last 5 weeks, so that's great. And this week we had Emancipation Day. I was in the big Emancipation Day parade. You know, I got to
It's
wave.
A national holiday or what? Is it
no,
like
it's only a holiday in the District of Columbia because it commemorates the fact that Abraham Lincoln bought 3,100 slaves 9 months before he signed the Emancipation Proclamation. It was almost like a PR thing, you know, that right. that they were setting up the country to get ready for the Emancipation Proclamation, and he went out. It's the only compensated emancipation in the history of the United States, maybe in the history of the world, I don't know, where the government actually went in and paid slave owners, I think, anywhere from like 50 to $300, and they got they were paid, and the 3,100 slaves in the District of Columbia were set free. So it's our one holiday, official holiday in the district. District schools are closed. This year it was a ripoff for school students because it came in the middle of Easter break, spring break, so they were off anyway. Students are off, government offices are closed, and we have a parade. So I was in the
parade. That's pretty cool. And then didn't you have a concert or something like that?
Yeah, big concert afterwards with a lot of groups that I'd never heard of before because I'm so painfully old. No, actually, there was Rusted Development, which I think you've heard of.
Yeah, they were good.
And
yeah.
MC Hammer and some old rappers, Dougie Fresh and some other people. And we had a debate. They had a great debate in the Lincoln Theater, which is an old theater in the district, where they talked about what emancipation means today, not just in terms of people not being enslaved, but also, people becoming economic slaves and what we can do about that, and returning citizens, and all the problems that are involved with human liberation. And just while I'm on the subject, just because this thought popped into my head, and I know you've talked about this many times, I was just stunned to read that 15% of the Walmart employees are on welfare.
Yeah. Well, that was, remember, I think maybe a month and a half ago, I was watching Bernie Sanders, and they were doing, I think it might have been hearings for minimum wage increase, where he was asking the representative Walmart whether or not that seems, think of it, because they were talking about giving these big corporations so many tax breaks, yet meanwhile, their employees are on welfare. 15% of wealth, exactly. And you know, they don't really work full time, so they don't get all the benefits. Right. That's how they get away with it. I know that the Walmart down in Douglas, which literally killed the downtown of Douglas, which has done to every small community in the United States, doesn't even hire people who speak English. These people actually work in Mexico, live in Mexico, but work in Walmart. And I mean, you'll ask somebody, can you talk to me in English? And they'll just look at you like, they can't. So I don't know. You know, I remember when Walmart used to be the place where you could go and buy things that were made in America. Wasn't that how they started the reputation? They only would sell things that were made in America. So whenever you went there, whether it was Hanes underwear or whatever, it was products that were made in America. And then something happened as they became, I guess, more successful. Now they are one of the wealthiest families, and the Koch brothers own a good portion of Walmart also.
Yeah, and those guys, you know, I mean, we've had this terrible ruling by the Supreme Court where you can just put as much money as you want into politics, and you know,
just because you're rich doesn't mean that you can have more power. I mean, isn't that kind of like part of the thinking that even if you're a rich person, you should be able to influence as much power as your money has to buy?
Well, you know, I mean, the idea of one man, one vote. You know, the whole concept of one man, one vote. Well, I'll tell you what, I vote in every election, but I'm sure that the Koch brothers' vote counts more to just every politician in America than my vote counts.
Yeah, that's right. I don't know what they were thinking. What were they thinking? It amazes me. It's one of those things that you say, are you so removed from reality that you can't see that? Yes, of course, money is always corrupted. I mean, isn't that what they say? Money, power absolutely corrupts, absolutely, and money is the same thing. I mean, how they could say that, it's okay, I don't know, because you look at these Koch brothers and they do everything from fund organizations that my son is looking at an organization. They're going to pay him and pay for him to stay somewhere in D.C. So they have an incredible influence. They have influence in the youth. They have influence in every politician that's running and wants to be reelected. So, I mean, I don't know. I wonder sometimes where I am. Am I living on a different planet that nobody sees that's just going to be completely unfair and shake up the balance of power to the point where it's kind of laughable?
Well, that's the old saying, right? That is the old saying, that money talks, you know.
Right.
And
right.
And that's what the Supreme Court said. It's a violation of your freedom of speech not to allow you to spend all your money on, but it is crazy. And as far as your son goes, we are already working on a plan to sneak in and kidnap him and deprogram him.
I know. Well, maybe we can just
set him in front
of his head and learn how the Koch brothers do everything they do so well. I mean, they do it very well. You got to give them credit.
They do it very well. But if you have a lot of money, it's not as hard as if you don't have money. But we're going to set them. I read somewhere that the Romans, the first kind of psychological therapy was that Romans used to put people that had battle fatigue in front of big aquariums and let them watch fish swim. So we're going to put them in front of a big picture of Hillary Clinton.
There you go.
Until he says, "I am a liberal," and then we'll let him.
He says, "I'm a Hillary."
I love Hillary.
I love Hillary. All right, man. I'm counting on you.
All right. Well, we're going to do that. So while we're on the subject of the changing scene, the changing scene of politics in America, you know, there are a couple of things that have just seem to have caught fire in terms of changing attitudes and changing the political landscape in America. One of them is marriage equality. We've seen that change in a lot of and you know, all kidding aside, we've talked to your son Diego, who's a young Republican, and one of his friends Zoe, and they both stand firmly behind marriage equality, which is you know, kind of a they're the great hope, I think, for the Republican Party, that there is some more young people that are trying to push the party towards the middle. But another one is legalization of marijuana, decriminalization of marijuana. And I just read that for the first time, a majority of American citizens that were polled are in favor of legalization.
Right. Well, you know, this is 420. This is 420. So
yeah, I don't understand
the National Pot Day. And it started out with national. I mean, it goes at Amsterdam celebrates today. And the whole thing is, it's not like a concert. It's not like, you know, you're going to have speeches. It's just that everyone's supposed to go out and smoke, you know, like just go out to a place and smoke and go home. That's kind of it.
The issue is.
Huh?
You go out and smoke, and then you forget what the issue is.
Where like, you are.
That's why are we here? Yeah, we're here to go get Twinkies. Let's all get in the car and go to a 7-Eleven.
And go real slow because we don't want to, you know, we don't want to, like, have any problems with the law. So
exactly.
You're going to go extra slow. Maybe you even decide to walk and not even get in a car.
Yeah.
It's interesting. You're right. It's completely changed. It's kind of like what amazes me with smoking. Smoking has completely changed in the past 10 years to where it was hip and everything to now. You can't even light a cigarette in the city of New York, not in Central Park, nowhere. So this is now, you're right. I mean, it's amazing. I think when you look at the map, I think most of the West, even Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado on up, has passed law that actually, you know, legalizes medical use of marijuana.
Right.
And I think now this national thinking is to legalize it completely. And, you know, in Colorado, I was just looking at this, you know, medical marijuana, they tax at 5.9%. Recreational is 15.9%. Now, that's what I got out of this news article. I had heard that it was as much as 50, but that's still, and I understand that Colorado is making a heck of a lot of money on their taxes on, you know, marijuana.
Well, in their first month of legal sales, they generated $14 million. And that's with 59 marijuana businesses, but they're allowing, there's going to be approximately 550 outlets across the state. So that means in 1 month, they made $14 million on 10%. Of the outlets that there will eventually be. So that would be $140 million a month.
Mm-hmm.
at that rate. It would be $140 million a month when they're all operational. And that's nothing to sneeze at. Plus which, you know, we all know that it would take the profit out of the marijuana for organized crime. You know, we saw what happened with alcohol. Now, you know, there are many problems associated with alcohol, and we would have to have a long debate, I think, on whether it was a good thing or a bad thing. But, you know, organized crime ran cities like New York and Chicago when there was prohibition. And after prohibition, they started to move the gangsters out. So it's reasonable to believe the same thing would happen with pot, and it would help bring about some more financial stability in certain states. And I mean, there's a downside to it too, but that's certainly the upside.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, the doctor on, I guess he's on CNN, Sanjay Gupta, I don't know if I'm saying his name
right. No, that's right, Dr.
Gupta. But he had came out against, you know, actually legalizing marijuana, and now he came out with 9 reasons why he's changed his mind about marijuana, which was interesting. And, you know, one of the big arguments you always hear is that, you know, well, if you legalize marijuana, it's going to lead to other things, and it's going to be addicting. And it's funny because in one of his things, it says that that's just not true. One of the reasons, I think this is number 2, it doesn't lead people to the use of other drugs. He says, we now know that while estimates vary, marijuana leads to dependency in around 9 to 10% of its adult users. Cocaine, which is classified as less addictive than marijuana, it hooks 20% of people, 25% get hooked by heroin, and 30% are hooked by tobacco. So, you know, and there's a lot of argument. And I mean, I do know a lot of people who do and never did go on to do heroin and meth and other things. It's like, I don't know. I mean, if you drink a beer, does it make you, you know, drink vodka immediately? I'm not sure. It's interesting, but I think there's enough people who have been doing it over the years that a lot of the myths can be laid to rest, I think. What do you think?
Well, you know, I remember when I was in high school, they used to show this film. Remember, it became a cult classic called Reefer Madness. Do you remember this? And it was a government film about the guy smoking a joint,
yes,
and he just goes crazy and his eyes bug out. And, you know, so yeah, we've certainly gotten more sophisticated about that. But there are a lot of addictive substances out there. And I'm a diabetic, and it really has wreaked havoc with my health. And sugar, there's a study that shows recently that sugar's more addictive than cocaine, and
right,
sugar's in everything, or corn syrup's in everything. And, you know, so, I mean, anything in excess, there's many, many things in excess that are not good. And I think that one of the things that we're doing here in Washington and passing our law, we have a new law where it's been passed by the city council. It has to sit in Congress. Like, you know, it's all our laws. First, it has to be signed into law by the mayor, and then it has to sit in Congress, where all our laws must sit in the District of Columbia. But they've decriminalized marijuana. So if you have an ounce, if you're in possession of an ounce or less of marijuana, there's a $25 fine. So it's not going to ruin your life. It's
right,
not going to give you a criminal record, but it's not sanctioned. You still can get, you know, your marijuana confiscated and get fined $25.
Right.
You're not allowed to smoke it in public, just like you're not allowed to drink in public in the District of Columbia. So that seems to me to be a reasonable approach, because that's one of the big problems is, you know, some kid gets caught smoking pot in a state where it's a felony, and there are many places where it is, and then he's got a criminal record for the rest of his life. Can't get a government job, can't get a top secret security clearance, can't get, you know, lots of other things in life, lots of other benefits. And you know what? He can drink as much as he wants and get
right,
those, get those,
and then
benefits,
maybe kill somebody on the way home.
Right.
And you know, there is something to the fact that a lot of times marijuana is the only thing that works. You know, more than any other drug, and they say every 19 minutes somebody dies of a prescription overdose. And look how many kids are now, and how many people are, you know, addicted to oxycodone and you know, Vicodin and all this stuff. So I don't know, you know, I mean, I think it definitely needs to be decriminalized. I think that it would help. I'm thinking Arizona could use it, but it's just going to be interesting to see where it goes from here. And then, you know, like in Denver, with it being recreational also, how do you deal with somebody who maybe vacations in Colorado, smokes, goes home, and then applies for a job that's with a defense contractor that, you know, he wants to abide by the federal laws? So, right. Excuse me, does that, I mean, how is this all going to come to play? Because it's going to crash heads eventually.
Well, right. And you're going to have to work it out. There was a recent incident in Washington State where it's legal, where a bunch of kids were busted at Mount Rainier for smoking pot. And they were busted. And they said, but it's legal in Washington. But Mount Rainier Park is a federal park. And there's a federal prohibition. So yeah, these things are going to have to be worked out over time. But I think this is an incredible change in attitudes in America. And if you're out there and you have an opinion on legalizing pot, call in. Let us know how you feel. Kathleen and I will send you some free chocolate chip cookies as an incentive. So call in. We're gonna let Kathleen get a drink of water, and we're gonna play a song for you right now. We'll be back in a few minutes. But today being Easter, we're gonna talk about religion and politics when we come back. So I'm a big fan of Broadway musicals. My mom ran the local amateur theater when I was a kid, and so I'm a big fan of Broadway musicals. And here's a song from one of my favorite musicals for Easter. This is Superstar. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Try not to get worried, try not to turn on to problems that upset you. Don't you know everything's all right? Yes, everything's fine. And we want you to sleep well tonight. Let the world turn without you tonight. If we try, we'll get by, so forget all about us tonight.
Everything's all right, yes, everything's all right.
Well, and there we go. That actually was not the song Superstar, but it was another even better song from Jesus Christ Superstar. So we thank Don for that, because that is a great part of the musical. And, you know, my cousin Jeffrey, I hope he's out there listening, but my cousin Jeffrey and I used to drive my Aunt May out of her mind by playing the whole album and singing all the songs from Jesus Christ Superstar. She thought it was very sacrilegious. Of course, in the 1970s, we thought it was a rediscovering of who Jesus was. And that's where we're going to start the conversation right now. And that is that Kathleen and I both worked for the Democratic National Committee and for Jimmy Carter at the point when religious fundamentalists were just really coming of age again in American politics. They've always played a role in American politics, and there have been different periods in time where they've been more forceful than others. But we had guys like Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell. Remember Jerry Falwell, Kathleen?
Tammy Faye Baker. Remember him?
Tammy Faye Baker.
Yes.
Makeup stocks plummeted the day that Tammy Faye Baker went off the air, because the woman wore more makeup than anybody. But, you know, they really influenced a lot of the politics in the early 1980s. And I think they're having a big influence through the Tea Party and other groups today. And what I really want to talk about is the question of whether they should or not. I mean, religion is such an important part for a lot of people of their lives, and it informs everything they do. but should it actually be part of the political process? If you have an opinion on that, I'd love to hear what you have to say, because I'm tired of listening to fundamentalists talk about how our country was formed on the ideas of Christianity. It was founded by Christians, and it was founded using many of those principles, but the number one principle was separation of church and state.
Okay, but you know what? At the same time, then we can't complain about this movement that wants to take, like, the manger out of any city building. Right. Now, I don't know. You know, when I was growing up, I try to think of it. How did I think of it as a kid? I knew there were people that weren't Christians. You know, we learned about it. But I kind of did think the United States was kind of a Christian country.
Yeah.
You know, and I know we talk about that there's a separation. But I kind of, you know, really miss the fact that you don't have that in the buildings. I kind of miss the fact that you don't have the manger in the city square, you know, where they would put it with the lights. Now there's a movement from that. Now there's even a movement to take, you know, God out of the dollar bill. They've, you know, in some places been successful in taking God out of the school and the prayer. So, you know, I don't know if we've taken it too far, because I still think when I was growing up that I tied all that into everything I did. Okay, you know, there was church, there was God. God was in everything that we did and everything that we saw. And he was part of everything that we learned. So in a sense, are we better off under that or with this nothing about God and all in anything?
Well, that's a good question. And I'm a faithful believer in God. And show you an example of how crazy it's gotten, the manger is one thing. But there's a thing in Bladensburg, Maryland. I find this very interesting. There's a war memorial to the veterans that fought from Bladensburg, Maryland in the First World War, I believe it is. And it's a big cross in the middle of the highway, and it's called the Peace Cross. In fact, the area is named Peace Cross, after the cross. And the cross doesn't say anything about Christianity. It says peace, courage, hope, faith. These things are written around the base of the cross with the names of the brave men and women who sacrificed their lives from Bladensburg in that war. Now, there's a group of people that want to take the Peace Cross down because it sits in the middle of a highway. It's, you know, there's a roundabout, you know, it's like a traffic circle, and this is the thing that's in the center of the traffic circle. And of course, the traffic circle itself and the roadway is owned by the city, right? It's community property. It's government property. I think that's taking it too far. I think that some of these symbols should be allowed to be grandfathered in. I think that I'd like to see. I don't want to see us get rid of all of our culture. You know, we talk about how important cultural diversity is in the United States. I think we need to be a little more like the Canadians in this respect. That, you know, it's okay to have a manger. It's okay to have a creche, and it's okay to have a menorah, and it's okay to have whatever symbols the Muslims have. But then how far does it go? Do you also have to have there's a woman in New Jersey who's now suing the Department of Motor Vehicles because she wanted the tag number. She wanted to get personalized tags that said atheist, and she was turned down for that. So do you have to accommodate her? Do you have to accommodate Wiccans? Do you have to accommodate, you know, all religions throughout the world? And where do you, you know, how do you set the standard? It's a tough thing, and it's a slippery slope. But, yeah, I agree with you, Kathleen. I don't know. I guess I grew up in a Catholic neighborhood in North New Jersey, and I was Catholic. So the school, you know, we did the Christmas play. It was all about Christmas. You know, we did a Christmas play. Do we have to relegate that just to the church? We can have a Christmas play at church, but we can't have a Christmas play in the schools.
Well, how about learning the songs like, you know, Silent Night or, you know, even Jingle Bells. You know, it was interesting when my kids were young. It was at this co-op nursery, which means the moms would take turns running it. And living in New York City, you know, very large Jewish population, and we would do things for all the different holidays that people had. There were some people who were Muslim and stuff, but I'll never forget, you know, and I kind of, this is kind of a weird thing to say, but I think as Christians or as Americans, we have been taught to be accepting of other religions. Yeah. But at some times, those religions don't bother to learn Christian ways either. And I remember when one of the mothers was talking about Passover, and she said, well, you know, next week we're going to talk about Easter, you know, bunny rabbits and, oh, what does she call it? Bunny rabbits and colored eggs. And I sat there and I thought, no, she didn't really, that's what she thought Easter was for Christians. Uh-huh. She had no idea, which kind of find it amazing being Jewish, but she really, that's what she had associated with. And then we had this big conversation how to a lot of people, you know, being a Christian is Santa Claus and a Christmas tree. So, yes, you know, it's a commercialization of our holiday and our religion that's taken so much of it and pulled it a different way. And I don't know. I do think, and this is kind of different than what you were saying, that I do think this country was built on Christian values and on a God. And I think we've allowed people to say, well, if you don't believe in it, you don't have to say the Pledge of Allegiance. You don't have to sometimes even go to war. But to take it out to make it easier for a few, I think that was the wrong approach. I kind of really do think that there was an acceptance for people not to follow those, maybe kind of, you know, our Pledge of Allegiance or whatever. But to totally take it out of what we have been raised on, I think is a really, really bad move. I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you a story like your story. It's, you know, where they taught when Tricia was my oldest daughter. Tricia was in you know, I think she was in daycare or she might have been in kindergarten. They taught them songs, I guess. And my mother-in-law came to Washington one time and was sitting here and she said to Tricia, sing us a Christmas carol. Cause Tricia always sang when she was little. She had a great voice and she used to sing. And she said, well, I don't know any Christmas carols. And her grandmother said, well, didn't they teach you any Christmas carols in school? And she thought for a second and she said, oh, yeah, they taught me when I know it. And she started to sing dreidel, dreidel, dreidel.
Yes.
They made it out of clay. You know, and she thought that was a Christmas carol. But I thought that was a good thing. I'm like, well, she understands, you know, that people have different traditions and they're all important and we should celebrate all of them. You know, we should teach people about all of them because when you learn about them, you have better understanding and our system was founded on Judeo-Christian values. You know, now Christians will be all upset out there saying, no, it's just Christians were the first people over here. Well, that's true, but you know, we follow the Old Testament and that's all about the Jewish faith. And I just watch, you know, I have a ritual every Easter, which is the most sacred day to Christians, actually, because it commemorates the resurrection. But a lot of people think Christmas is, but it's not. It's Easter. And I watched what I consider the greatest movie ever made, which is The Ten Commandments. And it's like I can't even remember how long it is. I think it came on last night at 7 and it went till midnight. I can't imagine people sitting in a movie theater for 5 hours. But, you know, it's not only great because it tells this great story, but it's great because of the characters in it. One of the characters is Vincent Price. Of all the people to have in a movie about the Bible, they have Vincent Price. Another one is Edward G. Robinson.
Oh, yes.
And he's got a bad New York accent. accent, and he's saying, "I'll show you your Moses. There's your Moses." You know, and it's funny because you just see him from all the gangster movies he's ever been in. Right. But it's also a great story, and it blends the two traditions of Judaism and Christianity together. So I agree with you. I think we've lost something in this whole transition, but maybe that's the price we have to pay to
I think people would disagree. I think it's the price to pay that's going to cost us our soul, to tell you the truth, because I look at today's kids and there's no checkpoint, not even a mental checkpoint. I mean, come on, when you were raising, everywhere you looked, it talked about God and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. Now there's a lot of people who don't believe in that guilt by association, but if you're Catholic, you grew up with that, and that kind of tended you to back off of some decisions you made because there was that karma, you know, guilt by, you know, association. And you know that there was always going to be some kind of backlash, and now there's nothing. There's no checkpoint for these kids. There's nothing that, you know, kind of is that subliminal kind of thing that says, yeah, it's not a good thing. You know, yeah, it goes against the moral code. There's nothing like that to lead anybody. And I think, especially as kids, you need constantly checks and balances. And more parents are trying to be friends than to be, you know, parents. And I don't know, with this new technology, so I get frustrated.
Well, there you hit the nail on the head, I think. I think it's our responsibility as parents to do that. Because, you know, same things bother me. And, like, I'll get on a metro train, and I can't sit down if a woman's standing a woman's standing up. But I've been on metro trains where young men are sitting down and pregnant women are standing up. It just drives me crazy. I want to go grab them by the back of the neck and say, "Hey, man, didn't you have a mother? This woman's pregnant. Get the hell out of your seat and be a, you know, be a gentleman." You know, because when I was a kid, I tell this story a lot. When I was little, I mean, 5 years old, my grandmother, if we were on a bus, my grandmother and I went everywhere on the bus in New York. You know how that is. Mm-hmm. So I went from Newark to New York on the bus. And when, you know, we had a family of like 8 people and we had one car. So my dad took the car to work. Nobody had a car. So we took the bus. And if there was a woman standing on the bus, I don't care if she was 25 years old, my grandmother would make me go up. And I would do this. It was embarrassing. I would tug on the woman's skirt and I would offer her my seat. They would always look at me because I was so small, and they would say, "Oh, that's very sweet, honey, but that's okay." And I would have to say to them, "You don't understand. I can't go back. My grandmother will not allow me to sit down while you're standing up." And because if I went back to my grandmother, she would have said, and I said she doesn't want the seat, my grandmother would have just said to me, "Go convince her. Go stand next to her." And I would. I remember instances where I would stand next to the woman until she felt so damn guilty that she went and sat next to my grandmother. But I'm 60 years old today, and right, I cannot stand on a bus, or I cannot be on a metro car or a bus and see a woman standing, especially a pregnant woman. Drives me nuts. Well, we have an old friend on the line, Taboo. I saw Taboo.
Oh, Taboo.
At the Emancipation Day celebration. I wanted to know where he'd been, so he's back. Taboo, are you with us?
I'm with you all. How are you all?
Good. Very good. Happy Easter and happy past Emancipation Day.
Well, thank you all to you all.
Yeah, so what's up? What do you want to say? We're interested in hearing what you have to say.
Yeah, just about the founding principles. Yeah. You know, I don't think it was religious at all. It was about freedom.
Right.
Liberty, in other words. You know, wasn't it Christianity? That was the problem.
Right, you know, I agree.
Well, maybe I can understand what you're saying, but it was the freedom to be able, I guess, to believe in whatever you wanted to believe, right?
No. It was all based in natural law.
Yeah, life, I think liberty. That, you know, obviously some of the founders, Plymouth Rock, the Puritans, they were escaping religious persecution. So they
came.
Yeah, go ahead.
And definitely
they
Catholics,
came, but they brought their prejudices and all of that. But see, a new movement came in after the Enlightenment, and it was a new movement in the Revolution, and it began about 1760s and all, you know, this thing about freedom. And those old ways, the superstitious ways, you know, the witch hunts and all of that stuff. And we still have a lot of that right to this day. You know, the Bible says, let's say right today. Today's Sunday, right?
Right.
What does the Bible say the penalty for working on Sunday?
I don't know, but I'm sure there is a stiff penalty for work. It's because you're supposed to
Penalty is death.
Yeah. Oh, you're in a lot of trouble, Kathleen.
Oh, me?
Well, I'm just saying.
I thought that was if you exchange money. And since you don't pay me, I'm not worried about it.
Oh, well.
That's why I don't pay you.
Well,
no, but wasn't it that money couldn't exchange hands?
I don't know.
Yeah, well, you know what money is. Money is not just currency alone.
Right.
You know, money is whatever a person will take for a product produced or service rendered.
Right.
Well, and you know what? I think people make the mistake. I think that people make the mistake, Taboo, that because the country was primarily found, the guys we call the framers of the Constitution, for example, were Christians, and they used some of their own values, used a lot of their own values in framing the country. They make the mistake of saying that it was founded on Christian values. I agree with you. It wasn't founded on Christian values. It was founded by Christians.
Well, there were some horrible Christians. Well, you got to remember, I mean, I respect all people, and maybe I should be careful how I say what maybe I shouldn't say it. But, you know, I mean, I would ask the question, are Christians part of the problems? Look right now, the Christians and the Muslims, I mean, we're all people now. Religion, to me, is a religion or belief system that many people accept and go by. It's a belief system, right? Now, if you look right now, we have the Crusades still going on, the Muslims against the Christians, from the religious perspective.
Yes.
We
do in many parts of the world.
Right. See, so we want to get away from that. You know, I mean, slavery was a key. Slavery was old as mankind.
Yes.
But if I'm correct, this country was the first government that was set up on natural law in a form of a government, a Republican form of government. And I think, Senator Brown, you and I might disagree a little bit here, that the difference in a Republican and a democracy, under Republican, you can't do what they did to part of his people and still doing to them, like treating us like slaves and having chattel slavery all then, you know, under the peculiar institution. So,
and with that, Taboo, you know, we're having to go off. We have 30 seconds, and maybe that's what we should talk about next time, too, is the difficult discussion of religion and how you believe this country got its values. I mean, I think there's a lot of different things that can be said, but we need to get off the air, and we want to thank everybody.
Yeah, and thanks
bye-bye
for calling into Taboo. And you're right. There's economic slavery. There's all kinds of slavery, and we should talk about that. So,
yes.
Kathleen, thanks, Taboo, for calling in. And Kathleen, what do you want to say? We'll let you have the last word.
Oh, just happy Easter to everyone. Peace and hope.
Yes, peace and hope. And
especially
thanks
for Michael Brown.
Yeah, hope for Michael Brown.
Michael Brown, that he keeps on fighting the good fight.
I'm going to try to keep on fighting the good fight. And thanks again to Taboo, who's a faithful listener and calls in from time to time. We're always happy to have his insights because it helps make a better show. And I hope that more of you will call in. I know today's a holiday, so there's probably not a lot of people out there listening, but call in and set us straight because, you know, I can't be the only one trying to save Kathleen.
That's right. I got to have a mass movement.
That's right. So thanks, America, and we'll see you next week, and we hope we'll have an interesting guest. And you know what? Some week, as our guest, we should have Taboo.
Yes, we will, and what he believes in his beliefs. That should be interesting.
Yes. So thanks, and we'll see you next week.
Capital of this nation, 200 years of exploitation.
representation. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.